The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
So I want to talk about an inner peace process. And everybody's been talking about the peace process. Sounds more like a food processor at this point. You know, everything's getting all sliced and diced. But in Jewish tradition, we believe that any outside process is a reflection of an inside process. And Jewish tradition believes that history is a process. There is a very real theme to this process. And that in the spiritual realm, let's put it, in a kind of cosmic way, there's a process. And your choice in life is whether you want to attune yourself to that process or you want to be out of step. There's a certain choreography of life that's going on. And either you're with it, or you're not. Okay? And it's kind of like a symphony, whereby the joy of being part of a symphony is that we're all playing together, and it gets so intense that I feel like I'm the whole symphony, and you feel like you're the whole symphony, because we're so connected to each other. So there's a process that's going on, whether you're part of it or not, but your choice is precisely whether you want to be part of it or not. Whether you want to experience yourself being part of it or not. Now the Kabbalah, our mystical masters teach us, that there's a very specific process that happens from Rosh Hashanah until Simchas Torah, the rejoicing of the Torah. Okay? For those of you who might not be so familiar, the first holiday we hit is Rosh Hashanah, which we talked about a couple days ago, New Year's. We then, 10 days, have a 10-day period of tshuva, which includes the Rosh Hashanah, until Yom Kippur, and that's the Day of Atonement. Then there's 4 days of preparing ourselves. We're running around building sukkahs and finding lulavs, which I hope I'll get a chance to tell you what that's all about. And then we have this incredible holiday, which is absolutely awesome, especially in the land of Israel. And you've got to come to the land of Israel someday and see that holiday, which is Sukkot, where we sit in these huts, right? This is a hut the Jews had. And we would sit in there, we would sleep in there, we would eat in there. Then we have a lulav, right? Have you ever seen a lulav? A lulav is this palm branch, but it's not open. And then you've got these other, you've got something called hadassim and aravos and myrtle branches. I don't know. I've never, the only myrtle I know is from Lucille Ball. So, but myrtle branches and, I know, I'm not dating myself. Everybody knows Lucille Ball. And then you've got the etrog that kind of looks like a lemon, but make sure it's not a lemon. Okay? And you hold it, and you'd see people do this. And they shake it, you know? They shake it. I remember I met a rabbi from New York City, and he said to me, "I'm not into any shtick." Okay. I don't know how successful you could be a rabbi if you don't have a shtick, but okay. He said, "I'm not into shtick." I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'm not into the Israel shtick." Now, the land of Israel is just a shtick. Okay, fine. And he said, "I'm also not into the Kabbalah shtick." Right? I assume that was an affront to me. I didn't take it personally. I'm not into the Kabbalah shtick. Right? I'm a rational thinker. So the first thing I thought of, because we met during Sukkot. Yeah, a rational thinker. You go see Jews on Sukkot, take these lulav branches and go like this. Tell me, if that's not mystical, then, you know, go get yourself a lulav. I mean, what is this? What are they doing? They're taking these different branches and they're shaking it up. And they're going back and forth. Have you ever seen this? You've got to see this. You've got to see this. They're shaking up the lulav, and they're twisting back and forth. This, by the way, inspired that famous song, "Twist and Shout." Shake it up, baby. Shake your lulav, right? It's unbelievable. If that's not mystical, I don't know what is. So what are we doing? What is this process? And after Sukkos, we come to the climax with the Simchas Torah. We leave our little huts, and we take out the Sifrei Torah, the Torah scrolls, and we dance with the Torah scrolls. Right? Dance with the Torah scrolls. You know? What is this process? So according to Kabbalah, there's a spiritual process happening in the universe during that period of time, and either you're going to plug into it or you're not going to be part of it. But what is that spiritual process? The spiritual process is called an inner peace process, an inner love process. So let's talk about what a peace process is, what a love process is. The Torah tells us a very interesting story about Adam and Eve. And this story about Adam and Eve, according to Kabbalah, is the microcosm that reflects the macro process. So let's look at the story. In the beginning, Adam and Eve were really not Adam and Eve. There was just one being. And that being was androgynous. I don't know what that word means, but I think it's an impressive sounding word. Androgynous. What does androgynous mean? It means one being. Right? This is one being that incorporated a multiplicity. Two sexes within this one being. And the Midrash describes it as they were one being connected back to back. So when you see the story about God creating Adam, you have to imagine that he's not Adam like me, right? But rather, Adam is this being that has two heads connected back to back. And then it says that God says it's not good that Adam is alone, right? It's not good that Adam is alone. I will make for Adam a helper who is opposite to Adam. Okay? So it says that God then fixes up Adam with all the animals. Puts him on these blind dates with a bunch of animals. Okay? There he is, sitting in the lobby of Paradise Hotel, and in walks his shidduch, his date for the night, blind date set up by God. You can imagine she's so excited. Right? In walks a gorilla. Right? Oh, you can't believe it. And it says that Adam gave names to the animals. Because the animals came in one by one and he saw none of these are a good shidduch. But the whole time that Adam is looking for his, her soulmate, because remember Adam is his, her already, she, he is on, right here, connected to the back. Okay? And so everywhere I turn, right, I'm looking all over, right? And the whole time, right here, they were connected back to back. This, by the way, is the mystical source for get off my back. Okay? Well, that's not funny. That's true. Okay? Because we were connected back to back. And I want you to get off my back and I want you to face me. Right? Because that's not a relationship. Back to back is not a relationship. Face to face. Face to face. So what does God do to this being? Okay, now that Adam is sufficiently depressed, because he's been going out with all these animals, or she's been going out with all these animals, totally depressed, he goes to sleep. And according to the Ramban, he actually became depressed. So you think you might hit depression sometime. Imagine, in the Garden of Eden, it's only been one day of life, and you're already depressed. Right? He was depressed, so he went to sleep. You know when you're depressed, you go to sleep. Wakes up in the morning, and there she is. Miss Paradise. Wow. Flesh of my flesh, bone of my bones. He was being literal, right? Right? Because what did God do? God took this being that was connected back to back and split that being down the middle and brought them face to face. Okay? And this is referred to in Hebrew as nisira, to cut, nisira. Okay? And this story of this back-to-back, face-to-face, is the paradigm of life according to Kabbalah, and is the paradigm of all of history. It's especially related to this period of time, from Rosh Hashanah, climaxing with Simchas Torah, the rejoicing of the Torah. How so? What does it mean that Adam was one, back-to-back, and then brought face-to-face? It means that Adam was a oneness, but didn't know he, she was a oneness, and therefore didn't experience love. Love and peace is the experience of oneness. And Judaism is telling us that you and I are one, whether we like it or not, right? Whether we know it or not. And we are one with the world, whether they or we know it or not. And we are one with God, whether we know it or not. The choice is to know it. And when you finally know it, you experience the ecstasy called love. Love is the experiential knowledge of oneness. So Adam and Eve were one, but they weren't in love. Because they didn't know they were one. And their oneness wasn't achieved through choice. Right? They didn't choose to be one. So they were back to back. They were one. But they didn't face each other and choose to be one, and by choosing to be one, experience the oneness, which is the ecstasy of love. So this process mirrors a kind of cosmic process in terms of our relationship to God. That Adam and Eve's relationship to each other is a metaphor for our relationship to God. That we are one with God, but we don't know we're one with God. We're born in the world, babies are one with the world. But they don't know they're one with the world. Right? Because they've never experienced separateness from the world. As we're growing up, what's the process of consciousness? We become more and more aware of ourself, 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 ourself. And we start feeling divorced and disconnected from the world. But you have to understand, before you can feel connected to the world, you have to first feel disconnected from the world. Right? And when you're feeling disconnected, don't get all bummed out. Because it is the necessary step before connectedness. So we are one with each other, with the ultimate reality, who we call Hashem, God. But we don't know we're one. And therefore, just as Adam and Eve are split from each other, separated, that separation is creating the space for now turning and facing each other and choosing to reconnect and experiencing the oneness, which is the ecstasy. Okay? The Zohar says that oneness starts with separation and ends with unity. But if you start with unity, you'll end with separation. You got to first start with separation. I'm not you. You're not me. I have an independent self. You have an independent self. And feel that sense of self and distance. But then, all of a sudden, you start feeling that distance and start feeling that loneliness and start feeling, experiencing that disconnection, because you have a certain memory that this isn't the way it was. But you didn't know what it was until you had something to contrast it with. And then you start yearning and craving for connection. So from the separation, you create the space and the awareness and the yearning and the craving to choose to reunite. And now you're one, but now you know you're one. Okay. This is exactly what's happening. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and Simchas Torah. The way it's expressed in Kabbalah is that this oneness, so to speak, splits and separates. Because the oneness was back to back, it was unconscious. And now this split creates the opportunity for face to face and consciousness of oneness, which is love. You follow this? On Rosh Hashanah, begins what's called the Nesira. And in Kabbalah, there are stages. There's the separation, then there's what's called kissing, hugging, and then intimacy. And that's reflected, according to Kabbalah, in these holidays. Rosh Hashanah, from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, it's the splitting. 10 days of splitting and separating from the back to back. Okay? Yom Kippur is the beginning of the face-to-face, right? And then Simchas Torah is described as full intimacy with God, metaphorically. You know, it's interesting, all these metaphors in Judaism, because none of them are to be taken literally, but they're all to be taken seriously. Rosh Hashanah is more God is a king. Yom Kippur is more God is a father. But Sukkos There's more God as a lover. Different metaphors. Different metaphors. What is Rosh Hashanah all about? So we talked about it. Rosh Hashanah, I am told that I make a difference. And my choices matter. And I've done something to violate my relationship with God, to violate myself. And my choices really mean something. Right? And there's judgment. When someone judges you, you don't feel close to them. Judgment alienates you. Right? Even though, as I talk, you know, when we love someone, we judge them, but the truth is, but nonetheless, it alienates people. People feel far. They feel put off at a distance. You don't feel close and warm and intimate with the judge. Right? You feel a little put back. You kind of take, you know, and you feel a certain distance. He's judging me. It's the beginning of that separation. I'm not God. God's not me. And I'm being judged. You know, the word for judgment, or the word for the process of judgment, is called gzar din. The word gzar, ligzor, also means, does anyone know what ligzor means? To cut. Ligzor means to cut. Gzar din also comes from the word gezer. Gezer is what? A carrot. What does it have to do with Rosh Hashanah? Nothing. Nothing. But I thought it was an interesting connection. If you give me some time, right? And we take a few drinks of vodka tonight, I'm sure I could come up with something. Okay? Anyways. One thing's for sure. The gematria, the numerical value of carrot, is the exact same for cutting. Whatever. Okay? Share that with your friends. See if that inspires them. Okay. So, but that's what Gezar Din does. Gezar cuts me off from the one who is judging me. And I feel distance. Rosh Hashanah is described as this. We start off in our relationship with God, back to back. We're not conscious. Right? We're not conscious of the love. So Rosh Hashanah, I'm getting judged because I've been behaving in a way that is not being acknowledging this oneness. And that judgment is actually cutting me off, pushing me away. And I feel the distance, the king and me. Right? And that happens from Rosh Hashanah till Yom Kippur. What happens on Yom Kippur? The Kabbalah describes that there's this back-to-back situation. There's this slow splitting process. And then, what happens to this side? This side kind of like collapses. Because its whole support was the connection, but it didn't know. And it turns into a little dot, right? Then faces the other, and then it's all about expanding that dot into a full stature, whereby they kiss, they hug, and they have intimacy and oneness. What does that mean? Rosh Hashanah is a time where I feel cut off from God. God is my judge. I am being judged. God is the king, and I am kingdom. There's connection, but still, there's real clear distinction, so much so that the king's in his palace, and I'm out here. But Yom Kippur, all of a sudden, I discover, you know, God is also my father. Now, not fathers like some people's fathers these days, unfortunately. A loving, warming father. And now I can begin to face my father and feel my own self worth. And this builds up until Sukkot, whereby I get forgiveness. What did we explain about Yom Kippur? Rosh Hashanah tells me there's God and there's me, and life is in my hands and I'll be judged for what I do. You got that? Yom Kippur tells me life is in God's hands. And what choices you make doesn't really ultimately make a difference to God, because God is in complete control. Your choice is whether you want to acknowledge that, right? We talked about that. So there's a dialectic going on. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur seem to be contradicting each other. Rosh Hashanah says, you pay because you did something, right? And Yom Kippur says, but even though you did something, it could be recycled and everything can be worked out because everything's in God's control and God forgives you, right? So Rosh Hashanah creates that distance, and then all of a sudden, whereby Rosh Hashanah tells me, It's in my hands. There's God. There's me. Yom Kippur tells me there's really just God. Remember we talked about it. Our relationship to God is like the thought to the thinker. So from my perspective, there's me and God. But from God's perspective, there's just God. The man of my mind is not separate from me. He does not enjoy an independent existence that would count as if there's him and me. He's just an expression, a manifestation of me. I'm not him, he's not me, right? That's Yom Kippur. Okay? There's a certain sense of surrender on Yom Kippur. But then Rosh Hashanah moves towards true peace and love. Because what is true peace and love? Love is certainly not that separation, there's you, there's me. And love isn't that kind of nullification, there's just you, which is Yom Kippur, there's just you, and everything's been in your hands all along. What is true love? True love is beyond both. True love is there's me, there's you, and yet we exist within a oneness. What is love? Love is both selfish and selfless. Love is both assertiveness and surrender. Sometimes you've got to assert yourself. Sometimes you've got to let go. Sometimes you've got to let go. Sometimes you've got to say, no, no. I got to assert myself. It's a dance, love. It's a balance. It's a oneness. And yet, I'm not you, you're not me. And yet, we're still one. It's a mystery. It's God's mystery. See, people have this crazy idea that we're making love. You don't have to make love. Well, you can't make love. You can only create a relationship that will receive love. Because love already is. And the question is, are you setting yourself up in a way, attuned to it, to be a vehicle for it and experience it? So how does Sukkot express this interesting balance of true peace and love? Whereby there's oneness and yet there's still distinction and identity. There is this selfless surrender and yet there is this assertive self. How does Sukkot create that? So think of what we do on Sukkot. We do two basic mitzvot, two basic commandments that contradict each other. Okay? And it's in the contradiction where love is found. What is the sukkah? We have a mitzvah to sit in a sukkah and eat. I don't have to do anything. I just lay shape a sukkah. Sit in a sukkah. I don't have to do anything. Right? And I don't have to own a sukkah. I can walk into your sukkah. I don't even have to ask your permission. And I can sit there with my tuna fish sandwich and say, lay shave a sukkah. I'm sitting in a sukkah. It doesn't have to be mine. And the sukkah represents that all-encompassingness. The sukkah so embraces me, so encompasses me, that it even encompasses and embraces the dirt on my feet. Completely embraced and immersed in the sukkah. Just like Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is like a mikveh. God is referred to as a mikveh. If you know what a mikveh is, it's not a ritual bath. I don't know what a ritual bath is, because to me a ritual bath means you're not really going in water, it's just some ritual. Right? No, you actually go into water. Right? And you immerse yourself completely in the waters, completely surrender. You're not allowed to have anything separating you from the waters. Completely giving yourself over to the oneness and the all-embracingness of the waters. And that's Yom Kippur and that's Sukkah in terms of the Sukkah part. Give myself completely over to it. I sleep in the Sukkah, I snore in the Sukkah and I'm doing a mitzvah. Totally passive. Give myself completely over to God. But then I have another mitzvah, which has a completely different energy. It's called the Lulav. Because whereby the Sukkah is, I put myself into this environment, into this context. And I don't have to do anything and already I did a mitzvah. And it doesn't have to be mine. A lulav has to be yours. You have to own this lulav. If you can't afford a lulav, then you go to someone and say, could you give me your lulav? I'll give it back to you. But you have to give it to me. I have to own it. So you actually acquire the lulav and it's yours. And then you give it back to the person and it's his. But it has to be yours. Lakachtam. You have to take the lulav. Right? You have to take that lulav. Ownership of the lulav. And what does the lulav represent? The lulav has hinted in it what's called the 10 sefirot, the 10 divine qualities that the world and the universe is a manifestation of. In other words, what does the lulav suggest? Another inspirational song which will date me, which is, got the whole world in my hands, got the whole world. That the whole world is in your hands at that moment. Every part of the lulav suggests a different aspect of, let's call it, the colors of the universe, right? The roots of the universe. And you're taking all that, right? And you're shaking it. But people think that it's like a fishing rod. Because they go like this. Right? They got the wrong movement. Because according to Kabbalah, the whole idea is this. You're pulling into yourself. Right? Right? The sukkah is you're throwing yourself into the sukkah. Throwing yourself into the all-embracing context. The lulav is described as pulling this energy into yourself. From all directions. Up, down, right, left, back, but pulling it all into yourself. You do it 18 times, because 18, of course, is the gematria of chai. You're drawing life energy into yourself. Right? It's a completely different experience. You follow it. Sukkah is, I sit there, I sleep there, I throw myself into the sukkah, I don't have to do anything, even the dirt on my feet is included within this oneness, this context. Lulav's the opposite. I have to own it, I have to grab it, I have to shake it, I pull the energies into myself. Completely different experience. Right? It's in my hands. That's Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah tells me it's in my hands, and what I do makes a difference. And Yom Kippur says it's in God's hands and what you did didn't make a difference. And which one is it? It's Sukkos. It does make a difference to you and to God because God wants it to make a difference to you. But on the other hand, it doesn't make a difference because all is included within the context and within the oneness and within the plan of God. What is love? Love is surrender and assertiveness. Love is we're in this oneness. And yet I'm not you and you're not me. And yet we're one. We can't figure that out. We can't figure it out. But how do we get to that oneness? Well, it starts with the separation. I'm not you, you're not me. And sometimes the best marriages start with a lot of fights. Right? Because we're grappling with our identity. You know? And that's often what happens. What happens is this. People fall into romance. Love. We're one. What I love, you love, and what you love, I love, and what you think, I think, and what I think, you think. Right? And then you get married and you find out that I don't think what you think. Right? All of a sudden, it's amazing. You know? All of a sudden, your wife comes in, she says to you, you call that clean? Of course I call that clean. I don't call that clean. No, you know? No? Uh-huh. You call that on time? Yeah. Well, it's just an hour. It's just an hour. What's an hour? I mean, we know that 10 means 11. We know that. All of a sudden we discover how I'm not you, you're not me. Right? And that's the beginning of oneness. Before, it was back-to-back relationship. Romance is a back-to-back relationship. I don't know you, you don't really know me. I've never really seen your face. I don't need to see your face because we're in love. Doesn't matter. You know? It's like in the movies. What is love? You know? He's driving down the highway, right? And get to some traffic light. She pulls up in the traffic light. He turns over to her. He goes, beep. She goes, beep, beep. He goes, beep, beep, beep. And then they turn off into a motel. Love is in the air, right? Right? It's not in your life. It's somewhere in the air. Right? Where is love? Where is love? Right? So that's not a relationship. That's not face-to-face. Face-to-face means I got to know I'm not you, and you've got to know I'm not me. It'll work out. Believe me, it'll work out. Okay? I'm not you, you're not me. And that's the beginning. And the tension. We get scared. We all of a sudden discover, wait a second, we don't think alike. We don't even like the same food. And then instead of getting scared, get excited. This is the beginning of a oneness that transcends our differences and yet respects our differences. That's what's going on. That's Sukkos. Sukkos is a time where the sukkah represents God's oneness, all-embracing oneness. I put myself into God's oneness. And the lulav says, yes, but I'm still myself and I still have to own things. It's still mine. I still have to make things happen. Surrender, assertiveness, self, selfless, one, and yet the many. Many, and yet the one. And then we get to Simchas Torah. Because once we're in the sukkah, And we're learning to live with each other. Right? That's when true intimacy happens, which is Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah is I'm holding the Torah like this, right? And I'm dancing with joy. Because I feel so, so connected to God. Without losing myself in the process. And I feel so connected to myself without losing God in the process. That's the real peace process. That's the real love process. True love starts with separation, ends with oneness. False love starts with oneness, ends with separation. That's when you can begin to go towards true love. Judaism has a dialectical experience being offered to us. On one hand, I'm not God, God's not me, I am accountable, I make choices, it really makes a difference, I'll be judged, and I feel far from God. All of a sudden, Yom Kippur, God gives me a big hug, tells me I'm forgiven, because what I did could all be worked out, because it's all been in His hands anyways, I was just making the choices of whether I want to know that or not. And then I go into Sukkot, and I realize it's not Yom Kippur, and it's not Rosh Hashanah. It's beyond the two. This in Kabbalah is hinted to in the two names of God. The name Elohim suggests judge, multiplicity. I'm also an Elohim. I could be if I want to be. I'm strong, I'm powerful. Yom Kippur is more connected to the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, the ineffable. Can't understand, it's beyond. But Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh suggests there's nothing but God. But Sukkot actually suggests the unification of those two as we develop towards the complete experience of that oneness, that intimacy. And I would say this is one of the sad, sad situations about the Jewish people. How many Jews know any of this? How many Jews know any of this? How many Jews know that they're part of any process at all? And how many Jews understand there's so much love in Judaism? There's so much beauty in Judaism. There's so much joy in Judaism. There's also pain. I'm not going to deny that, but there's not just pain. There's also a little guilt. A little guilt's okay, you know, it's not so bad. Sometimes it becomes total guilt. That's bad. Right. But if you understand that Judaism is a dialectic, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and then Sukkot, and then Simchas Torah, the complete connection with God, it's Torah that gives me joy. It's Torah that gives me joy. What gives a person joy? What makes us happy? Right. There's one Jewish philosopher who said, happiness is the certainty that I'm needed. That I'm needed. When you feel nobody needs you, you feel that, you know, God forbid you could die in your room and no one would even notice. Not happy. Not happy. What does the Torah teach us? The Torah teaches us that God needs us. God needs us to fix this world. To be more specific, God chooses to need us. That's true love. I choose to need you. There's something I need you to do for me. And that's what it means to receive the Torah. To receive the Torah means that I have something to do in this world. I have some great mission in life to accomplish. There's a service that I can perform. And I wake up in the morning and there's something being asked of me. And that's really a relationship. I don't understand people. What do they think a relationship is? A relationship is, what does my beloved ask of me? I so much want a beloved to ask of me. Right? And if you love somebody, you'll ask of them. And if you know they love you, you will be thrilled with the fact that they ask of you. Right? And Jewish tradition tells us that yes, the excitement of the awareness of our connection to God. But how does one feel connection when they feel that something's being asked of me? What can I do for you? What can I do for you? Why do so many relationships break down? Why? Because are they doing anything for each other? They just assume it's on automatic. Love is organic. Love is alive. It needs air, it needs water, it needs nurturing. You need to tend to love. Right? People put it on automatic. Put it on automatic. And so too in our relationship to God. You have to work at it. You have to tend to it. You have to allow it to grow. That's why the Torah is referred to as an Eitz Chaim. It's a tree of life. Just like a tree needs nurturing, so too Torah, so too you, so too our relationship with God needs nurturing. That's why Torah is the ultimate joy. That's why Torah represents the ultimate intimacy with God. Where God is whispering into my ears and asking me, do me a favor. Do this for me, please. Right? How do you know you love somebody? And how do you know someone loves you? It's when you know you can ask them to do something for you. And it's a joy. It's such a joy to do it. I'm so happy you asked me. So happy you asked me. Right? So what is the Torah and why are we so happy? Why does it epitomize the ultimate intimacy of such connection? Because I have a book that has recorded in it everything God is asking from me. And I'm so happy God's asking me something. There's something I could do for God. That was the power of when the Jewish people received the Torah. You know the famous saying, Na'aseh v'nishma. We will do, and then we will listen. And that is considered to be the highest form of love, of commitment, of passion. What's the highest form of love and compassion? Imagine you call up your lover and you say, could you do me a favor? And they say, well, what is it? Oh, your heart breaks, right? What do you really want them to say? You say, sure. You don't say, well, what is it? And then I'll decide, because then I'm not doing you a favor completely. I don't need to understand what you want me to do for me to do it for you. I'm so happy to do it for you. If everything you would ask me to do were things that made absolutely no sense to me, well, then that would be a total nullification. That would turn into a pretty unhealthy relationship. But if the only things I'm willing to do for you is the things that only make sense to me, then that's not a relationship either. There's so many things that my wife asks me to do. I don't understand why she wants me to do this. Well, it doesn't make sense to me. I would do it a completely different way. Oh, what an opportunity to show love. That's when you really show love. So when you really love somebody, you really feel they love you, you're so happy they're asking you to do something for them. And whatever it is, I'll do it. Whatever it is, I'll do it. Jews rejoice in the fact that God has presented to them 613 requests. Can you do this for me? Can you do this for me? Nebuch, there's a guy on the street, he doesn't have any money. Could you do me a favor? Could you give him some money on my behalf? Nebuch, the world is so dark. Could you light a menorah for me? Bring a little light into the world. And the world is so stressed out. Could you bring a little Shabbos in the world for me? Could you do that for me? God, I'll do anything for you. And thank you for doing that for me, that I can do for you.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.